It's the 4th of July, the day we celebrate our nation's independence. It's also a great day to take stock of your financial independence. Hi, I'm Rob West. Are you on the road to financial freedom or falling under the bondage of money? It's one or the other. Either you control your money or your money controls you. I'll talk about that today. We're off, so please hold your phone calls. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial decisions. Independence gave our nation freedom, and financial independence also gives freedom, the freedom to make choices. But to get there, you must gain control over your money. When you do, you'll have a greater ability to decide many things: where and how you live, where you work, and how much you work. Now, when we talk about financial freedom or independence, we are definitely not talking about independence from God. He owns everything and provides everything we need to live and to serve His kingdom. James 1:17 reads, "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change." Even our ability to earn money comes from God. Deuteronomy 8:18 tells us, "You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you power to get wealth, that He may confirm His covenant that He swore to your fathers as it is this day." Now, to be sure, God wants you to be financially free, because that allows you to be more generous and to serve Him more fully. Sadly, folks often say they'd love to give more to God's kingdom, but they just can't afford to. The more you control the money flowing through your household, the more generous you can be. And that's why we should all be on the road to financial freedom. So how do you know if you've made a wrong turn somewhere? Look for a signpost that says debt. The greater your debt, the less freedom you have. Proverbs 22:7 puts it rather bluntly. The rich rule over the poor. The borrower is the slave of the lender. That's because when you're in debt, you're really working for someone else, not yourself, and certainly not for God. The more you have to pay out each month to service your debt, the less freedom you have to use that money in other ways, like serving God more fully. Now, there's more to being financially free than just avoiding debt. Unfortunately, debt is just one form of financial bondage. There's another that's more difficult to recognize. With this form of financial bondage, you may have no debt at all. That's because you can be rolling in money and still be slave to it. This bondage is the mindset that material things will make you happy. When you think that way, you strive to acquire more and more. But the truth is, after a certain point, you no longer own things. They own you. You have to care for them, clean them, store them, secure them. The more you acquire, the more restricted you become. Money, of course, is just a tool to be used wisely or not. Having a lot of it can enslave you just as effectively as having debt if you're not careful. And while wealth itself is not evil, the Bible has clear warnings about your attitude toward it. It comes down to a heart issue. 1 Timothy 6:10 tells us, "For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs." Here are the danger signs for this type of financial bondage. First, you think so much about money that you have no peace with God. Your focus is day-to-day rather than eternal. You can't give as generously as you would like or think you should. An opportunity comes along to be more generous. You have the money, but you just can't make yourself do it. You think, "I might need that money for something else," so you don't act when you feel God is leading you. If that happens repeatedly, you're in financial bondage. Then there's a lack of contentment. You always want bigger, better, faster. You're not content with God's provision. You crave more. When you think that way, it doesn't matter how much money you have, it'll never be enough. Ecclesiastes 5:10 reads, "He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity." So, how do you get back on the road to financial freedom? Well, obviously, if you're in debt, you have to stop borrowing, get on a budget, and start paying down your debt. The FaithFi app can help you set up your budget quickly and easily. Learn more at faithfi.com. If you have the other form of financial bondage with plenty of money and possessions but no peace, try giving more. Giving actually breaks the power that money has to enslave us. And if you follow God's principles for managing money, avoid debt, save diligently, and give generously, you can experience true financial freedom. As I said, we're off today, so don't call in, but we've got some great calls lined up in advance, so we'll go to those just around the corner. I'm Rob West, and we'll be right back.
For American Family Radio, I'm Charles Morris with Haven Ministries, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word. We know in our hearts that the Lord can save anyone at any time, but sometimes we think it has to be a long process. I think that's one thing the Gospel of Mark helps us to unlearn. Mark's favorite word is immediately. He uses it more than anyone else in all the Bible. Like in Mark 10:12, Jesus healing a blind man who has come before him. He saw his faith and then looked at him and said, "Go your way, your faith has made you whole." What happened next? Immediately the blind man received his sight. Sometimes faith is a process, but don't forget, the Lord can save immediately. Christ's love knows no bounds, not even over time. Spend more time with Jesus. Visit GetAnchor.com.
Are you struggling to fit your faith into your practice as a Christian financial advisor? The Certified Kingdom Advisor designation teaches you a step-by-step process to confidently deliver advice that aligns with Christian values. Discover the skills you need to help your clients make a kingdom impact. Get started today by enrolling in the CKA educational program at kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified. That's kingdomadvisors.com/getcertified.
My wife, Jan, played in the marching band in high school and then in college. They all had matching uniforms, but when they played the music, nobody played exactly the same thing. As believers, unity of the faith, we're not the same. We're different. We have different parts to play. But there can be unity as we play our part in Christ Jesus.
Exploring the Word, weekday afternoons at 3 Central on American Family Radio.
What if buying groceries, gas, or dining out could help change lives? With Christian Community Credit Union's Cards That Give to Missions, you can help spread the gospel, combat human trafficking, and protect vulnerable children with every purchase at no cost to you. Apply for your card today. More information is available at joinchristiancommunity.com. That's joinchristiancommunity.com. The credit union is an underwriter of this ministry. Membership eligibility required.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. Hopefully that opening segment was helpful to you, giving you some practical insights on how you can manage God's money. And it is all God's. That makes us stewards of His resources. And in order to be an effective steward, we need to know the heart of the master. So we go back to Scripture and pull out those big themes that we're to hold money loosely, give it generously, live with contentment, find our identity not in our things but in Christ, and pursue an eternal perspective. You put all of that together and it fundamentally changes how you approach managing God's money, recognizing it's a high calling. Well, we want to help you do that on this program each day. We're delighted you're here, and we know you probably have some financial questions you've been thinking about lately. Well, we'd love for you to bring those to the table. Let's talk about them together. Let's begin today in Harrisburg, PA. Robert, go ahead, sir.
Thank you for taking my call. Sure. We have received some ERC monies, and we're just kind of curious on what we should do, and also tithing, how we should handle that as well.
Yeah. So you have a small business and you received an employee retention credit. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Yeah. So for the benefit of our audience, this is a payroll tax refund. You have the ability to get up to $26,000 per employee. It was designed by the Treasury Department to help businesses that kept employees on the payroll during the pandemic. And we're seeing as these payments come out, folks are looking forward to putting this money to work. Essentially, Robert, this would be a business tax refund. So it's essentially revenue to the business that was no longer expensed because you didn't actually have to pay it into the IRS. So being able to take this money and now applying this to your business, essentially, if you're tithing from your business, it's a bit different than the way you would approach a tithe on your personal finances. So with your personal finances, you would just take any increase that you have, salary, wages, a gift, an inheritance, anything like that, and you would tithe on that as an increase, give a tenth. With a business, it's different. You've got to take the gross revenues, but then you have to subtract expenses from those revenues to determine what your true profit is. And that would include after you pay out the salaries, after all of your overhead and equipment and facilities and marketing, I mean, all of that, taxes, would leave you with some retained profit in the business. And I would look at that on a certain interval. You know, oftentimes you'll do that on an annual basis when you file your taxes. So this would basically just increase the revenues of the company. And at the end of the year or quarter, whatever period you determine, after you subtract all the expenses and determine how much profit you have over and above the salary you're going to pay yourself and others, then if you wanted to tithe on that as a business that you own solely, then you would give a gift on that increase. So I would just factor this into the overall business operations to determine what your true increase is. Does that make sense, though?
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. I love the fact, Robert, you're looking at your business not only as a way to provide for yourself and meet the needs of others through your product or service, but as an engine for giving. That's phenomenal. So it's just another tool that as the Lord provides and you have profits over and above your operating expenses, giving as unto the Lord is just a wonderful thing. And if this ERC can help you give even more, well, that's great. Hey, thanks for calling today, sir. If we can help you further along the way, please don't hesitate to reach out. Let's head to my hometown, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Is it Tara? Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is that I've been married for quite some time now, but my name was never on the mortgage. My name was on the is on the title, but not on the mortgage. Now that I'm making some money, I would like to contribute so we can pay off the mortgage quicker. So I want to find out whether or not that will be a good thing for me just to go and contribute to the mortgage when my name is not on it. And given that we do not want to refinance because of what's going on now with the interest rate, or if you have a better idea how we can do that, pay off the mortgage quickly, even if my name is not on the mortgage.
No, it that's fine. So typically what happens there is you're married and you and your husband own this home. Is that right?
Yes, we do.
Okay. And you're both on the title. Yeah. So you both legally own the home. But what happened was likely when you all went to get the mortgage, you only needed your husband's income in order to qualify for the mortgage. So he was the only one that was put on the mortgage. Is that right? Okay. But there's a lien on the property with this mortgage. So if this mortgage isn't paid, they're going to have the recourse to foreclose on the home that you own with your husband. So you absolutely want to pay this off just as he does. And by the way we approach finances in marriage, when two become one, that includes our finances, right? So we want to look at this as an opportunity for you all to have shared goals, bring all the finances together, manage it together, and pursue whatever the Lord has for you as one flesh through your finances, whether or not your name happens to be on the mortgage or not is secondary. So I would say, yeah, as long as you all have proper emergency funds, meaning 3 to 6 months expenses, if you're on track in saving for retirement, you don't have any other short-term goals that are you're trying to meet, like saving for a new car purchase or something like that, then accelerating the mortgage is a great idea. It would allow you to pay it off, you know, that much quicker. And I'd love for that to be the case as soon as you can, but certainly by the time you retire, because that's going to take your largest expense off the table. So as you all look at your household finances together as a married couple, if you're working, you're bringing income in, he is as well, you're creating a spending plan, you have margin or surplus at the end of the month, and you want to take a portion of that and accelerate the mortgage payoff by sending an amount beyond the scheduled payment for principal reduction. I think that's great. And you would want to do that whether you're on the mortgage or not. The key would just be to talk to your mortgage servicer, whoever you write that payment to find out how they want you to submit that. If you do it online, you could, you know, add a little note, in the box that says principal reduction, and you could put it in there. If you're just sending it through bill pay service, you just want to make sure that that extra amount is in fact going to the principal. But at the end of the day, I think this is a great idea. And the fact that you're on the mortgage is really more of just an administrative type thing that had to do with where the income documentation was coming from.
Can I clarify something quick?
Sure.
Someone mentioned that, let's say that something happened, God forbid something happened to my spouse. In order for me to pay the mortgage off, I would have to go to court. That's when I got a little bit worried, concerned. I'm like, let me see if that would not be better for me to be now on the mortgage. Let's say that something happened, you know, we never know. It's not that we are talking about it, but it might happen. So I don't know
Yes.
if you see my concern.
I do. Yeah, let's do this. I've got to take a quick break. If you don't mind holding, I'd love to tackle this, the second portion of this with regard to you not being on the mortgage and the implications of that, because that's a good question. And there's a lot of folks that don't have a spouse on the mortgage, even though they own the home and both names are on the title. So we're going to take a quick break. Tara, when we come back, we'll tackle that second part of the question. More to come on Faith and Finance right after this. We'll be right back.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. soundmindinvesting.org.
We are grateful for support from One Ascent Investments on the Faith and Finance program. They manage a comprehensive suite of value-based investment strategies designed to help Christian investors live aligned with what they value most. One Ascent believes that if your values inspire the way you live, they should also inspire the way you invest. This can be a unique form of worship. More information is available at investments.oneascent.com. That web address is investments.oneascent.com.
AFA is no longer dependent on Facebook or YouTube to live stream our original programming. As of now, American Family Radio shows like Today's Issues, The Core, Airing the Addisons, and The Hamilton Corner are streaming live on the AFA streaming app. Independent live streaming is the next step as we come out from among them and separate ourselves unto the Lord. Search AFA Streaming or visit streaming.afa.net to sign up.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. For more than 30 years, they've been helping Christians reach their financial goals with step-by-step guidance for investors at every stage, from those just getting started to those getting ready for retirement. Through scriptural principles and practical suggestions, SMI offers financial wisdom for living well. More information, including the short video webinar on profit and peace of mind, no matter what's happening in the market, is available at soundmindinvesting.org.
By the grace of God, American Family Association is making a difference.
Bert Harper, co-host of Exploring the Word.
And we have set our face as a flint to stay true to God and His Word.
Contact the AFA Foundation today to learn how you can shore up permanent income for your retirement years while supporting the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Hey, Greg, I need some advice.
Oh, what's up?
I'm really struggling with finding ways to cut back. With costs going up, especially in healthcare, what do you guys do?
We use CHM, Christian Healthcare Ministries. It's a health cost sharing ministry that's been sharing members' eligible medical bills for over 40 years. Sure helped us stick to our budget. Here's the website, chministries.org. chministries.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. We're applying biblical wisdom to your financial decisions and choices. We'd love for you to join the conversation today with your financial questions. Back to the phones, we're talking to Tara in Fort Lauderdale, and we're talking about the mortgage. She and her husband are on the deed to the home. However, only his name appears on the mortgage. We were talking about the wisdom of the two of them together trying to accelerate the mortgage payoff, and I said, absolutely, as long as other pieces are in place. They've got some emergency funds. They're not paying high interest consumer debt. They're saving for retirement. Then I absolutely love the idea of accelerating the mortgage payoff. But she's asking a follow-up question here about the importance of or the significance of her not being on the mortgage if something were to happen to her husband. And Tara, basically, federal law requires lenders to allow family members to assume a mortgage if they inherit the property. So in this case, you're not inheriting it. You're already a legal owner to it. So you would be able to assume that mortgage at your husband's death and then just continue paying on it. Of course, if you didn't pay on it, they would have recourse to foreclose. You don't have to assume it. It could be paid off by the property being sold or refinanced, but they do have to let you assume it. So there would be no reason for you all to refinance at this point, especially if you have a low interest rate mortgage. It doesn't concern me that you're not on it. You all are treating it as though, you know, you're paying it together as you join all of your finances in marriage. But the fact that you're not actually on the mortgage itself is not a problem.
That kind of that helps a lot.
Okay.
We wanted to hear from you. Yes. Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
All right. You're very welcome. Thanks for your call today. We appreciate it. To Indiana. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much. And thank you for your wisdom from the Lord. I am of retirement age, but still working full time. I am drawing Social Security, and I do have military retirement coming in, and I'm also teaching adjunct, so I feel very blessed. My retirement is with the teachers, the TIAA, and my question about that is whether I should just leave it there or should I shift to a local money management firm where I know the individual who would be handling it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, TIAA-CREF is a reputable institution without question. Have you, so the TIAA-CREF is your teacher's retirement account. Is that right?
Correct.
All right. And are you still teaching?
I am.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you have the option to roll it out?
Yes, it would. In other words, yes, I could roll it into another local firm.
Usually you have to separate from employment before you can do that, but you may be able to. I don't have any problem with you leaving it right there. There's some great investment options inside that platform. Again, it's very reputable. The costs are, I think, very well, you know, in line with what would be normal and customary. So unless, you know, you had a relationship with an advisor where you'd just wanted somebody to take active oversight of it, then it's probably easier to roll it out as long as you have the ability to do that and you can keep it in a tax-deferred environment, because then that advisor would have essentially unlimited investment options available to him or her to be able to choose from. But if you're going to continue to manage it yourself, then I would just leave it right where it is. Do you have a relationship with an advisor, or are you pursuing one?
I do, and, you know, he pursued me, but he's a Christian, so I honestly would trust him. But I guess I was just questioning the wisdom. I don't need to move it. I don't feel the need to move it. I just was wondering.
Yeah. Well, if you're not sensing the need to move it and you're not feel necessarily compelled to hire an advisor to manage this, it seems to be performing well. I don't have any problem with you leaving it right where it is.
All right. And may I ask another question?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. So I am estranged. My husband left back in 2015, and unlike the previous caller, we are on the mortgage together. So there's about $70,000 left on the mortgage, and I have been paying and taking care of everything. And so I guess my question is do I try to pay it off, or do I simply make the house payment and not,
Who owns the house, Susan?
I'm not sure what you're asking. I mean,
who's
the house
on the,
is in both of our names.
Okay. So you both have, you both own 50% of the property still, even, did you actually file divorce, or are you just separated?
No, we're not even legally separated. He just left. That's it.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And so, are you in communication, and what would the plan be? Let's say you were to sell the property, what would you do with it?
He won't sign to sell. He refuses to sell. Yeah.
Okay. But you're if he's not making the payments, if you were to stop making the payments, the property would be foreclosed on, and he would lose a lot of value of this property.
True.
Yeah.
So would I.
Yeah, no, that's right. Now, I'm not suggesting you do that. Well, I mean, I think the bottom line is if you're treating this as, I mean, it's your home in addition to being an asset, right? And this is an unusual situation given that you're not legally separated or divorced and you own this home jointly, even though he's not paying any part of it and he's left. So I think at this point, I would probably just continue to make the scheduled monthly payments if you have a low interest rate, and just do everything you can do to shore up the rest of your financial life in your own name, rather than trying to focus on accelerating this mortgage payoff with an asset that he's entitled to 50% of.
Okay. Thank you so much. I sure appreciate you.
You're welcome, Susan. Thank you for your service to our country, and I'm so sorry to hear about the situation with your husband. We'll certainly pray that the Lord will intervene there. More to come on Faith and Finance right after this. We'll be right back.
Hope for Zambia, empowered by Family Legacy, is a ministry providing hope to vulnerable and orphan children in Zambia by investing into their spiritual, intellectual, physical, and emotional growth and well-being. Whether distributing 5 million meals each year to students or empowering them to graduate from high school and go on to pursue post-secondary education, we believe that when you educate a child, you change their world. Go to hopeforzambia.com/faith to transform a life.
You couldn't say anything challenging Dr. Fauci, or you were spreading disinformation. But I mean, you can look up Bigfoot right now. Is Facebook going to come in, or is YouTube going to come in and say this is misinformation? No, they don't do that. They only do that against conservative ideology on politics or government or culture. Or if you disagree with Dr. Fauci.
Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
We are grateful for support from Eventide Investments on the Faith and Finance program. Eventide's approach to values-based investing is grounded in the belief that humankind was created in the image of God. with intrinsic dignity, value, and worth. Eventide calls this investing that makes the world rejoice. More information is available at eventideinvestments.com. That's eventideinvestments.com.
God has entrusted his finances to you, and we at FaithFi have designed our FaithFi app to help you live, give, owe, and grow with that perspective. Our FaithFi app is the leading biblically based finance app. You can manage your money, get top biblical financial resources, and interact with a community of like-minded believers, where you can ask questions, get answers, and share what you're learning. Go to faithfi.com and click the word app to get started.
Hi, this is Todd Nettleton with the Voice of the Martyrs Radio, inviting you to join us Friday, July 14th for the Hearts of Fire virtual event. You'll meet four courageous women who showed incredible commitment to Christ in the face of intense persecution. This special event is free. Hear these inspiring testimonies of costly faith, plus worship led by Michael W. Smith. You can watch from wherever you are. Register online at heartsevent.com.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
It's great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. All right, we've got time for more questions today. We're just getting rolling here. Well, we've been rolling for a little while, but we still have a ways to go. So we'd love to hear from you with whatever you're thinking about financially today. Back to the phones, we go to Chicago. Hey, Pedro, go ahead, sir.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Quick question. I actually recently, probably in 2005, purchased a two-unit home in my name for my mother-in-law and my father-in-law. Just they needed to buy something else. Their credit wasn't where it needed to be, so I offered myself to assist them with the chances of selling the house and having them earn some cash. But after the 2006 economy crash, we decided to stay with it because it was lower than what it was actually worth. So we still have it. My only concern is that it's still in my name, and they're not benefiting any credit on that. They're making the payments. It has two units. They're getting income because they rent both units. They're getting enough income to actually pay for the entire mortgage and use a little surplus for their water.
Nice.
So what I want to do, how can I transfer the property over to them, remove my name, so that way they can begin to benefit the credit and everything that comes with owning a home?
Yeah. And so your objective is for them to own that asset outright in their name only?
Yes, that is correct, because it just breaks my heart that I still have it in my name. And even though I did them the favor, the first initial plans to sell it, you know, didn't work out. So we had to hold on to the property. And so we've been holding it on to it to this day. Everything is paid off. They haven't missed a mortgage payment, but they're not benefiting from any credit whatsoever. And I want them to start just earning that credit.
That makes sense. Yeah, so you would do a what's called a quit claim deed to transfer ownership of the home to your in-laws. Since it would be considered a gift, and since the amount would be above the $17,000 annual gift exclusion, you would have to file a gift tax form with the IRS. That's Form 709. That's okay, though. It would just be taken off of your lifetime gift exclusion, which right now is at $12.96 million. So this is not taxable. You just have to let the IRS know you're doing it so they can note that. And then at that point, it would be their property. And you'd probably want to just connect with a real estate attorney who could draft that quitclaim deed for you and make sure it's done properly. And then that would be filed with the county records office.
Okay, and then basically the mortgage will be completely in their name with the bank and everything?
No. So the mortgage is in whose name? Your name?
The mortgage is in my name, correct.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a little more challenging. So if the goal here is not just to get the asset in their name, but to build their credit, the lender is not going to take you off of the mortgage because you're the one that qualified for the mortgage, and they're counting on your, even though your in-laws are making the payments, in terms of, because they don't have good credit or a lack of credit, that was why you had to get the mortgage in the first place. So the lender has no incentive to release you from responsibility for that mortgage, regardless of who's been paying it. So the only way at that point to get it out of your name and into their name would be to refinance it, but they would have to qualify. And your interest rate would be, or their interest rate really would go up at that point. So unfortunately, it's not really going to benefit them from a credit standpoint.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
So there are other things you could do. You could add them as an authorized user on a credit card that you have, and your good credit history would transfer to them. They could open a secured credit card where they deposit a couple of $100s, and then they get a credit limit up to the amount of the deposit, and they could charge budgeted purchases, even just a few dollars a month, but that would report them as on-time payers. I mean, if the goal is to build credit, there are things you can do. You can even, ask Experian to start to count. Well, they're not making a rent payment, but utility payments, things like that, if that's in their name. So things like that can be done, but the mortgage is not going to be able to be transferred.
Okay. So they would have to refinance in their name in order for that to happen. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Pedro. Okay. Thank you for your calling, sir. God bless you. To Florida. Jose, go ahead.
Hi, Rob. Thank you for taking my call. I'm an employee, and I have a 401k to my employee. Currently, I have $22,000, and my wife is in the same boat, but she's got $8,000. I was conservative, and since I started, I allocated everything in bonds. So during the pandemic, I didn't take a loss. I was wondering when or what would be the signal for me to switch to stocks.
Mm. What is your age, Jose?
42, and my wife, she's 36.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, unfortunately, whereas bonds might normally be a safe haven in an environment like we were in with the pandemic and the economy, they weren't in the sense that because on the heels of the pandemic, we had this runaway inflation, which was caused by the easy money and low interest rates. Because the Federal Reserve raised interest rates so dramatically, it was really a very difficult time, unusually difficult for bonds. So you went through a pretty rough season there where bond prices, again, which typically are more stable, were losing value. And so this is actually, we're coming into a period where bonds are actually fairly attractive because the yields are up. And as the interest rates start falling, the bond prices are going to go up, not down. But given your ages, 36 and 32, you really don't need to be in a bond portfolio. So it's probably, it's probably a good time to go ahead and get repositioned to take advantage of the recovery in both the bond and the stock market. I might keep a little bit higher allocation to bonds until interest rates get back down than you normally would at 36. But I would start moving into stocks because you want to participate in that recovery as well. So normally, with somebody your age, you might have 70% in stocks and only 30% in bonds. And so if you're 100% in bonds, you may want to start moving into a stock allocation. But again, keep in mind, you don't really need to be terribly concerned once you get allocated into the right mix about the performance over a quarter or a year or even a couple of years, because you all have 30 or 40 years before you're going to need this money, at least 30 years probably. And so you've got time on your side. I think the key is to get positioned and then not try to make changes and time the market based on any of these factors, because when you do that, you can get into a situation like you've been in the last couple of years where despite your best effort to insulate yourself from the economic fallout of the pandemic, you actually kind of hurt your ability to make money. And given the time horizon that you have, I wouldn't be concerned about that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So do you think that would be a good idea to start moving 50-50 at this point?
Yeah, I think that's not a bad idea. And then maybe once the interest rates come back down, you move the remaining 20 or 30% into stocks. So you're at 80-20 or 70-30, but maybe a year from now, if that makes sense.
Yes, sir. All right. Okay. Thank you very much, Rob. God bless you.
All right. And you as well. By the way, if you haven't checked out our website recently, jump into the FaithFi community when you visit faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. Stay with us. Much more to come just around the corner.
You know, there's so much peer pressure and so many eroding factors in our culture that are bringing in the idea that gender is fluid and that somehow orientation is fixed, which is the other way around.
Satan is a specialist in confusion and manipulation in order to fool people into believing his lies.
You know, what are the intrinsic value of femininity? What is the intrinsic value of masculinity? Is it okay to be a man? Is it okay to be a woman?
And even using the church in his schemes.
It's a place where the church ought to be able to respond more graciously.
In the special edition DVD from the AFA Cultural Institute, Practical Ways to Minister to the Sexually Broken, Stephen Black and Laura Lee Stanlake help us understand and deal with the questions and struggles of identity and show us how we can effectively and gracefully share God's truth. Order it today when you visit resources.afa.net.
Absolutely free. We know you've learned to be suspicious of those words, but really, you can get biblical financial wisdom delivered to your inbox each week absolutely free. Articles, videos, podcasts, and special offers on biblical resources. Nearly 60,000 people receive our free weekly wisdom email, and you can too. Create your free FaithFi account by going to faithfi.com and click sign up to begin receiving weekly wisdom in your inbox.
We are grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing in the Faith and Finance program. If you have money in a retirement account or just a general investing account, you know the stock market can sometimes seem like a roller coaster. But it is possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind in investing, no matter what's happening in the market. You can see a short video webinar on that topic at soundmindinvesting.org. Since 1990, Sound Mind Investing has sought to offer financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
Great to have you with us today on Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. You know, more and more God's people are wanting to do business with companies that align with their values and priorities as Christians. Well, if you're looking for a mortgage partner who shares your values or a banking partner who shares your values, we'd love to for you to learn more about a couple of our underwriting partners. Movement Mortgage is a mortgage company that shares your values, and you can learn more at movementmortgage.com/faith or Christian Community Credit Union. If you're wanting a banking relationship with a credit union designed and built for believers, just go to joinchristiancommunity.com. All right, let's head back to the phones today. They're all full, and we're in our last segment, so we'll try to get to as many as we can. Quickly to Indiana. Charles, go ahead, sir.
Yes, I have a lot of grandkids, and when they get to 10 or 12 age, I set up a $5,000 college fund for them. Okay. And I'm wondering, is there a better way? Because I'm so far, I've been setting up that a 529 college fund.
Yes. I like that a lot, Charles. Have you used the 529 there in Indiana, or did you use another state's 529?
Indiana. In okay. fact, I have set up several of that, my grandkids.
I see. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. It does a couple of things. Number one is, it grows like a Roth IRA, so you don't get the tax deduction when it goes in, but it grows tax-free if you use it for qualified educational expenses, number one. Number two, you have those underlying investments like mutual funds in there, so you can grow the money, which is great on a tax advantage basis. Number three, they're getting more favorable because of recent legislation that would not only allow you to get the money back if they get a grant or a scholarship on a pro rata basis, but if they don't use it, they could transfer it to a Roth IRA and have it as kind of some seed money for a retirement account. There are some requirements there in terms of it's got to be in there 15 years and they can only convert it up to $30,000 total and no more than the annual limit for the year. But it gives you an option if you have a child who decides not to go to college to be able to still get this money into a retirement account, which could be a great beginning for them on their retirement savings. So I think for all of those reasons, I like the 529 a lot, Charles. Also, if their parents are going to qualify for any need-based aid, the 529 is great because it's not going to be an asset of the child, which is factored in much more significantly into the expected family contribution. You want it to be an asset of the parent, which is how a 529 is treated. The only thing I might suggest is you don't necessarily have to use Indiana, and Indiana's 529 may not be the best one. So I would, before you open the next one, go to savingforcollege.com. And if you fill out the questions there, they will actually recommend, based on the tax advantages and the overall historical performance of each of the 529s, they'll recommend the best 529 for you. And unless you just want to use Indiana's, it may recommend that you use a different state.
Okay, because I noticed the last one I opened up, there was a interest rate of 4%, but the one before that was a lot lower.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I would check that out. You know, they're not all created equal in terms of how the investments are structured and the performance. So that's where savingforcollege.com can give you an objective look at which 529 is best. But bottom line, Charles, you keep up the great work. You sound like a wonderful grandfather, and this will be an enormous blessing to your grandkids down the road. Thanks for calling today. To Weekiwachee, Florida, James, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just purchased a $350,000 mortgage. I got a good rate, about 5.5%. But the issue is I'm 72 years old, and I was wanting to know if you could advise me on some type of life insurance policies for the just in case I, you know, when I am, if I do pass away before my wife, that she would have the burden of the mortgage payment. Is that possible through the mortgage company, or I have to get that, separately somewhere?
No, you wouldn't want to get it through the mortgage company. That would be terribly expensive, and this is not going to be cheap just because of your age. So you're probably going to want to just look at a 10-year term policy that would last you until age 82. At that point, you would just drop it. But if you passed away in the next 10 years, it would cover, if you had a $350,000 death benefit, it would allow her to pay off the mortgage. Beyond that, she would have to use other assets, other income-generating assets and Social Security, hopefully just to continue on the monthly mortgage payment. But that's going to be the very best way. You're going to want to go out and shop that among all the term insurance carriers to get the best rate. But I'd look at a 10-year term policy to cover the mortgage, as much death benefit as you can get to cover that mortgage that still fits into your budget. But just simply because of your age, it's not going to be cheap.
Right. Can I ask you one more question, please?
Sure. Yeah.
All right, great. Okay, so anyway, we have a trust fund, and it's already been set up. But the problem is I wanted to get it established. As time has gone on, we wanted to make some changes, and we're kind of like skeptical about who we want to have to be the distributor of the funds and how to divide it up, because we have like 6 grandchildren and 3 adult children. And I was thinking, well, should we divide it in percentages to each one? Should we have them in our trust fund, our will, to sell all of our properties that we have and divide it, you know, with the older children, 33%? Are there any resources that can direct me and give me some...
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Let me do this. I'm going to send you a gift. It's just our gift for you for being on the program today. It's a book by one of my mentors, Ron Blue, who's a popular author of personal finance from a biblical perspective. The book is called Splitting Heirs, H-E-I-R-S. I think it's the very best book ever on these very topics. Not the mechanics, the tools and strategies of estate planning, but the why and the how of wealth transfer. How do you determine how much to leave to the kids? Do you have to give them all an equal amount? For instance, one of the principles in there that he uses is, if you love your kids equally, you will treat them uniquely, because they're each different in terms of where they're at financially. And some are married and some aren't. And some are mature spiritually and financially and others aren't. So, I think that book will be a great resource, James. So if you stay on the line, we'll get your information and I'll get a copy of Splitting Heirs out to you right away. And it's just our way of saying thanks for being on the show. All right?
Thank you, sir.
All right. God bless you. To Dayton, Tennessee. John, go ahead.
Hi, Rob. This is John. I got a question. I'm debt-free right now, and I'm 46 years old, and it's only by the grace of God. So I thank my Lord and Savior for helping me with that. But I'm currently got a high-paying job, and I don't know if I'm going to be doing this for the long term, but I'm making a lot of money, so I'm trying to save in retirement. I'm putting a lot away in retirement right now, but with the economy the way it is, I'm somewhat a nervous and a little bit conservative investor. So I can't stomach the roller coaster that we're on. So I'm curious, what does a diversified portfolio look like to you?
Yeah. What is your age, John?
I'm 46 years old.
Okay. You know, I mean, at 46, I would typically say that, you would want to probably have about 65% of your money in stocks, which would mean you'd have 35% in bonds. If you wanted to be more conservative, you would probably go with maybe 55% or so in stocks and 45% in bonds. The good news is this is a great season that we're heading into for bonds, and I think stocks will do well. I think the key is you've got to take a long-term perspective. I mean, you still have time on your side. You've got this high-income paying job. It's a great opportunity for you to sock some money away, but you want to do it with an eye toward the future, recognizing that, yeah, we've got some challenges, but every decade has its challenges. And we still live in the strongest and best economy in the world. And as long as you're properly diversified with a good mix of stocks and bonds between, as I said, probably 55 to 65, at the most 70% in stocks, then you just kind of set it and forget about it, if you will, and recognize that in the ebbs and flows and ups and downs, at least historically speaking, you're not going to lose money over that time period. The key is just to be systematic in your contributions. And one of the benefits of that is something called dollar cost averaging, where you're buying in at different price points. And when the market's down, you actually should see that as a great buying opportunity, because you're buying more shares of the same stocks with the same amount of investment, because the stocks are selling at a discount. And then as they rise, you benefit from that by owning more shares. But you've got to just have that long-term perspective and not get too emotionally attached, which is also why you'd probably want to involve an investment advisor in this, somebody who's arm's length, who can bring a more rules-based, disciplined approach to your investing, and not necessarily, which you're a little bit more emotionally connected to this, which can lead you to some poor decision-making with regard to selling out at the wrong time, because you get fearful, if that makes sense. So what I would do is interview two or three certified Kingdom advisors there in Tennessee. You can go to our website, faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. And just click find a CKA if you want to do that. But that's my best advice on how to think about diversification.
Thank you so much.
Is that helpful?
Yes, that's very helpful. Do you recommend metals at all?
Yeah, but not overweighting. So my recommendation would be to have no more than 10% of your portfolio in precious metals. You can do that in physical possession, where you'd actually buy the coins or the bars and store it and secure it. Better yet, though, you may want to consider just a tracking ETF like GLD or one of the others that tracks the price of the move of the precious metal, that gives you that diversification in the portfolio, but you're not having to pay the premium on the buy and sell and store it and secure it and all of that. So But I would say no more than 10% would be my recommendation. Hey, folks, we covered a lot of ground today. It's been my privilege to be along with you. I want to say thanks to my team today, Robert Sutherland, Pat Montague, and Devin Patrick. Couldn't do it without them. Thank you for being here as well. Have a great rest of your day, and come back and join us tomorrow. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.